Browns and Steelers in a rematch of that ugly meeting 2 weeks ago. Cleveland jumped out to a 10-0 lead and then sputtered. Baker Mayfield struggled again, 18 of 32 for 196 yards with a touchdown and two turnovers. Steelers win 20-13. Sorry, Baker. Cleveland now 5-7 with playoff hopes all but gone. But the story this game turned to something that happened off the field. Friday night, head coach Freddie Kitchens decided to wear a T-shirt that said Pittsburgh started it in reference to their brawl. Glad he doesn't want any distractions on his team. He was asked about the shirt after the loss.
I mean, listen, the T-shirt didn't have anything to do with us at the minus one moving out. I wore a T-shirt. I wore a jacket with it. My daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, and I'd wear it again. I'd put a jacket on. I covered it up. I took a picture with a fan. That was as simple as that, you know. T-shirt didn't cause us to give up 40-yard passes, and we were ready to play. That's the only thing people need to be concerned about. We were ready to play.
The truth is, the T-shirt in and of itself isn't the worst thing. The T-shirt is one of many things that has seemingly gone wrong for this team. Nick, what did you make of Freddie Kitchens' comments after the game?
Well, he's 100% right that the T-shirt had nothing to do with what happened on Sunday. And the idea that, well, it gave the Steelers extra motivation. Man, 2 weeks ago, first of all, these teams are long-term rivals. Second of all, there was enormous playoff implications on the line. Third of all, 2 weeks ago, these two teams played, and one guy on the Browns bonked the quarterback on the Steelers on the head with his helmet. So, like, they were going to be at peak motivation for all of these reasons, no matter what. So the T-shirt had nothing to do with it. But that doesn't mean it's anything other than an idiotic decision. It's indefensible, and it's indicative of why the Browns are one of the very most disappointing underachieving teams in the league, and a team whose most important player, the one we saw at the very end, has had two enormous issues all year. One has been about ball security and just turning the ball over. Yep. That's on the field. And the other is off the field, which is taking accountability. Because the head coach doesn't want to take accountability. Bart, I'm sure your kids have gotten you either presents or shirts or Absolutely. Something that... And I'm not as a public person as you are, but my daughters poke fun at me about the LeBron stuff because even at their age, they know this is something I poke fun at about. So I get almost every Christmas some LeBron versus Jordan clothing item. And I rarely get asked for pictures, but I'm not wearing that out of the house because of this exact concern.
Yeah.
And Freddie's saying my daughters gave it to me. Hey, bro, I saw the picture. You could have just left the jacket zipped all the way up. You know you're going to ask for pictures.
Close your jacket then.
You know this is coming. And this strikes me, someone, Bart, that doesn't still fully understand the gravity of the position that they hold. Yes. Doesn't understand the importance of everything that goes along with being the face of a multi-billion dollar organization, corporation, however you want to put it, because that is what he is. It's not the apples to apples, but it's Elon Musk smoking weed on the radio. It's like, it's not actually affecting the cars, but it's a terrible look for the face of your organization. And it shows me that your does he get it quotient is still wildly lacking.
He's in over his head. He's been over his head all year. And the reason that he's the head coach of this football team is because Baker liked him. But he's a negative influence on him. And listen, you have to understand that when you're the head coach of a team, you're the CEO of that team. You're the voice of that team. You're reporting to the stock owners of that team. And you're sending a negative message. And was it fuel to the fire? Of course it was. Athletes are going to use anything for bulletin board material. Did it affect the outcome of the game? Maybe not. But then it's going to affect the team going forward because now it's the topic of conversation that your players are going to have to answer questions for. Your quarterback's going to have to answer questions for. And I don't need my head coach being the distraction.
It's insane.
I don't need my head coach being on the back pages because we're not talking about the X's and O's. We're not talking about Baker and his turnovers. We're not talking about why you have a team that arguably has the best roster in football and they're underachieving. See, the Browns made a bad decision last year in deciding to go with Freddie Kitchens because he liked Baker Mayfield. You needed to hire the other coordinator who's showing that he can do more with less. Yeah, I know I understand that he has a stain on his record because of Bounty Gate. If you understand what Greg Williams is doing, he's doing in New York with a team that's on their third and fourth cornerback, that's on their eighth and seventh and eighth linebacker, has them in the top five in defense. Here you are, you have great pass rushers, great corners, first rounders all over the place, and they're underachieving because they have a lack of discipline, they have a lack of accountability to themselves. Not just the head coach in the organization, they don't have any accountability to themselves, and they're punching underneath their weight, not punching above their weight, and that falls right at the table of the head coach.
And somehow, some way, they had run three games in a row. So despite all of that, they were actually trending upwards. Baker was actually playing a little bit better, especially coming off that really ugly mess 2 weeks ago. And then you look at what happened yesterday, and it was all back to the same thing. It was play calling. It was penalties. It was a lack of third down discipline. It was just all around futility. Why do you think the Browns lost the game yesterday?
It looked like you want to say something.
Because I'm going to need my franchise quarterback to be able to beat a third string duck man off the bench. I'm going to need him to outplay him. And if you can't outplay the third man, this is the best coaching job I've seen Mike Tomlin. This best
he's coaching
coach job. He's coaching
no
his
Juju
guys
yesterday,
up.
No James Conner yesterday.
That's what good coaches do. And Freddie Kitchens may just be in over his head, and he may not have an opportunity to right the ship because we know they have a quick trigger finger in Cleveland.
And this is something, Jenna, to answer your question, the three most disappointing teams that are relevant teams in the NFL this year are the Browns, the Cowboys, and Philadelphia.
Yep.
And this is going to be a theme of some of my commentary today on the show. All three of those teams were in a not must-win, but close, damn close. The Browns was a must-win game.
Sure.
And all three of them started off great. Dallas was up 7-0 on Buffalo before it all fell apart.
Which they never do.
Philly was up 10-0 and then 28-14 before it all fell apart. Cleveland was up 10-0 in this football game. 10-0 on a third-string quarterback who you now are in the best possible position because Pittsburgh does have a good defense. But if you can all of a sudden get out to an early lead and force them to become one-dimensional. And then all three of those teams, the better coached opposition punched back and they folded. And the most disappointing thing, aside from Freddie Kitchens' nonsense, because Freddie Kitchens won't be there next year, Baker will be, is they were down 20-13 and Duck Hodges threw a pick. And you had an opportunity then and there to all of a sudden make your stand. Not that dissimilar from opportunities they had early in the year, in whether it was the Rams game or games early in the year where they had multiple opportunities even though they hadn't played well. And what did Baker do? Three and out for -8 yards. You get the ball back. He completes one pass for 5 yards and throws an interception. Now, I know he hurt his hand at the end of the first half, and he didn't look like the exact same guy after that. But the problem for the Browns is it is one thing to be a front-running team if you're constantly ahead. The team that I root for, the Chiefs, who I know we're going to talk about, they're a bit of front-runners. When things are going good for Kansas City, they look amazing. But they're ahead a lot, and so it can work out for them. When you're a team trying to establish yourself, if you're a front-running team and you don't have a come-from-behind gear, it's going to look like that. And so, to me, the Freddie Kitchens stuff is the bigger story this week. The Baker stuff is the bigger story moving forward because Baker's going to be there, Bart, for a long time. They certainly hope so. Freddie Kitchens is going to be there for another month, and then he's going to, I'd say, be an offensive coordinator again, but he was a running backs coach. His most recent full-time job before this one. So that's the more long-lasting concern for Cleveland.
And so Baker Mayfield will once again have to get used to another coach going into next season. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, moving on to Carson Wentz and the Eagles in Miami to face the Dolphins. Second quarter, fourth down. Dolphins line up in a funky formation on
the
one.
Gate. It's called the swinging gate, Gina.
Field goal attempt. Kicker Jason Sanders catches the touchdown on the true play. What is it called?
The swinging gate.
Swinging gate.
You can find it in Football for Dummies 101.
Miami takes the 14-13 lead. Fourth quarter, Dolphins up six. The Eagles went for that Hail Mary. It was anyone's ball. Dolphins say, it was ours. Wentz picked off. Eagles fall to 5-7 on the season, despite three touchdowns from Carson Wentz. Here's head coach Doug Peterson after the game.
As crazy as this is, I mean, I would say it's a long shot, but we're not out of it. We do have four, you know, of our division opponents coming up, and the guys got to understand that, and it's my job to make sure they do understand that we're still fighting and coming to work this week and ready to go and try to figure this thing out. In my position, I've got to make sure that the team understands that we got to guard against that and we're still a good football team. And again, listen, it's about what we do.
Right now, the title in the NFC East is like hot potato. No one seemingly wants it. The Eagles had a chance with Cowboys losing. They couldn't cap on it. What has gone so wrong for this Philadelphia team, Nick?
Well, everything at this point, and I take issue with what Doug Peterson said there. I don't know if people caught it at the very end. He said, we're still a good football team. Compared to who? What's your evidence?
The division?
But even compared to your division, you're looking up at a Cowboys team that is playing its worst football of the year right now. In your conference, the complete list of teams with worse records than the Philadelphia Eagles: Washington, the Giants, the Lions, the Falcons, and the Arizona Cardinals. That's it. Yesterday's loss cannot happen if you have any hope of not only being a playoff team. You're going to get to host a playoff game. It's going to be a ton of fun when we get to watch an 8-8 NFC East team host a 12-4 wild card team. It's going to be outrageous, but that's what we're staring at. You're up 10-0 immediately against the Miami Dolphins. They claw back in it. You're then up 28-14 in the second half, and you let the Fighting Fitzpatrick score 23 straight? You got to be kidding me. It wasn't a game where all of a kick return touchdown, we have a blocked kick, Carson Wentz has four fumbles. No, your defense just folded up shop in a game you saw on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys lose. You know your schedule. You know it's all in front of you. You know what I know, which is you're going to get a home playoff game. You win the division, whether you deserve it or not. Right. And to blow a 14-point second half lead to these Miami Dolphins in a critical game cannot happen if you're an average football team, much less the good football team Doug Peterson claims they are.
Can I put that on the T-shirt, the Fighting Fitzpatrick's?
Yeah, no, yeah, you can have it.
I love Brian Flores, who has this team playing amazing. You know, we laughed at the Dolphins early in the season, but they were in a lot of tough games early on, and they're learning how to finish games. You know, Devontae Parker, who was thought of as a cast-off, really has made some big plays. But I think this is more about Philadelphia and their lack of a killer instinct. I feel like ever since they got that title, we've hearing reports that they've been, didn't Orlando Scandrick say that? Mm-hmm. That we're going to have on the show later, said that, they're still celebrating and living off of that Super Bowl, because in that city, it's the first one. They don't seem like a hungry team. They don't seem like a team that's got a lot of grit to it anymore. It used to be like that, playing the underdog role, but now when they're the favorite, they don't come with that same fight, that same energy, and it's really starting to show. How can you, two teams that would disappoint you, say Cleveland and Philadelphia, understand and what you have ahead of you, you can't lose to the Miami
Both
Dolphins.
Both up double digits in their games.
Right, because that tells me that you take the foot off the gas and you get conservative and you can't find a way to finish games against a team that you could have stepped on their throats. I mean, I don't understand. 8-8 probably will win this division. And the only good thing, the silver lining, why Doug is saying, hey, I got to get the troops and let them know where we're at, that was the AFC opponent. Now they have all the opponents in their division, and they face the Dallas Cowboys. If they're able to win out against the Giants, against Washington twice, I mean, the Giants twice, Washington and Dallas, then that gives them a better NFC.
Of course. They can still win the division part, but the problem is when we talked about Philadelphia and that they were in such an advantageous position, even though they were trailing the Cowboys, it was because in addition to the Giants and Washington, they had the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Like, if you can blow, if you can allow allow 23 unanswered to Miami, you are not a lock against anyone. You're not a lock against Danny Fumbles. You're not a lock against Dwayne Haskins. You're certainly not a lock against the Cowboys, that Jekyll and Hyde team. Like, this Eagles team has no excuse for yesterday. Yeah. You want to say the reason that their season's gone awry was they lost their speed at the wide receiver position. How many points they score? Scored 31 points yesterday. That's got to be
more than enough to win.
To beat the Miami Dolphins.
Look, the problems that they're inflicting them now are the same things earlier on in the season. The roster, leadership in that locker room, and then the shaky play of Carson Wentz, who, by the way, yesterday actually played well enough to win the game. Exactly.
If you are up 28-14 on the Miami Dolphins in week 13 with a chance to tie for the division,
gotta win,
and you don't finish it, then everyone has to wear that from the head coach on down.
Let's move on to the biggest game on the schedule yesterday. 49ers and Ravens picked this up in the second quarter. Lamar Jackson and his ability to run picks up his second touchdown of the day. He had 101 rushing yards in this game. Lamar would lead the Ravens down the field to give Justin Tucker a chance to win the game with the score tied at 17. Tucker nails the 49-yarder to make the 49ers go away. As Bart would say, night-night.
Night-night. Give you a chance. It's a long flight home, too. That's a long flight home when you lose a tough matchup.
Ravens are now the one seed in the AFC. Here's the Tucker after the game.
I feel like in the spirit of my teammates who have been up here to talk to you guys the last few weeks, I should say something like real inspiring, like big trust. And I'll open it up for questions.
That's great. Yep. That's great. Nick, are the Ravens the best team in the NFL after what they did to the 49ers yesterday? Well,
that's certainly the best kicker in the NFL and one of the most valuable special teams players I've ever seen. And for a team that plays the style they play, it is so critical to have a kicker like him. Yeah. And he's been awesome for years and years. But to answer your question, Jenna, they're certainly playing like it right now because I didn't think they played great yesterday.
Not at all.
I didn't think Lamar threw the ball well. I understand the conditions were really tough. I thought San Francisco's game plan was incredibly sound. San Francisco ran all over them. Jimmy G had the bad fumble early, the fumble that you almost saw coming if you're watching. You're like, just get down, man. Yeah, like, right. You see people coming, but he didn't throw the ball to Baltimore. And San Francisco made a few key fourth downs. They missed the fourth down late in the game. That was the last time they touched the football. But here's right now why Baltimore has the argument that they're the best team in the NFL. They have an extra down that the rest of the league is not utilizing. They are in, I'm not a good golfer.
Analytics.
Right, I'm not a good golfer, but if you're just an average golfer and you're going up against a good golfer and they give you a shot, a hole, you're going to win. If everyone else has three plays to get 10 yards and these guys got four, which is how they are running their team, they are at such a strategic advantage. And then you add to it, everyone else feels good about field goals, getting 3 points once they get inside the 30. And Baltimore feels great about it once they get to the 35. They basically start every game up six. Like, we're going to get an extra field goal that you're not going to get. We're going to get an extra possession that you're not going to get because we're going to go for it on these fourth downs. And that right now, in addition to how difficult Lamar is to defend, because even in the game where he didn't play that well, he still had 100 passing, 100 rushing. All of those things, to me, make them the toughest team to plan for week in, week out.
I mean, they're tough to plan for, but some of these teams that they're going to play in the playoffs are going to see them for the second time, and they see the recipe to try and defeat them is to run the ball, keep them on the sideline, and try and get up, because even though this offense is averaging, I believe, first in scoring and number one over 200 yards rushing, it still isn't a one-shot big, fast hitting. You know, you saw some of those drives, you know, scoring drives with 7 minutes, 8 minutes. So if you get them behind against a team like Kansas City, then you have to come out of your game plan. And I still don't know if Lamar's proven that. For me, I think the best team playing right now has to be the New Orleans Saints because they're the most complete team.
Well, and you mentioned the outside passing game, Bart. That was, again, I'm not going to hold yesterday against them because the conditions were tough. And they were able to get the win. But I know the Ravens have this three tight end offense and they built it for Lamar. You are going to, right now, while they might be playing with an extra down, they're also playing with about 10 yards less width of field. Like, they're playing almost everything.
In between the hashes.
In between the hashes.
They don't throw a lot outside the numbers.
And Lamar's going to have to improve at least slightly in that regard moving forward, because I think there will be a team in the postseason that does a better job of taking that stuff away. But San Francisco, if you'd have told San Francisco you're going to hold them to 20,
yeah,
you're going to rush it for about a buck 80. Jimmy G's going to have one turnover. They'd probably take all those things.
Being on the East Coast with that kind of weather.
Peters
had his worst game as a Raven. I think he didn't tackle well, and he got in his own head. He was maybe too hyped up or something. But this Achilles heel for the Ravens, every team has a kryptonite, and I think the run defense against the Ravens is really something that they're going to have to address. They try to address by bringing in Pecco. It really hasn't happened because they play so much with small personnel on defense that you have to blitz, and if they're not going to make tackles and the team is able to punch them in the face, it could be a problem.
But when you're the Ravens and you don't play even close to your best game, and you beat the team that went into the game with the best record in football, it shows you how good you can be. By the end of tonight, by the way, San Francisco might have been 36 hours going from best record in football to the five seed.
All right, Baltimore Ravens now 10-2, riding a franchise best 8-game win streak with a win over the San Francisco 49ers. Coach, you want to play a little drawing a blank?
Sure. Favorite segment.
Yesterday, Deshaun Watson was impressive. 3 passing touchdowns and a receiving touchdown in the win over the Patriots. Bart, I'll start with you. The most impressive performance yesterday was blank.
Derrick Henry. I mean, the big man just continues to just start trending in the right direction. Early in his career, we thought he was going to be a bust, but this guy is a grown man. He's starting to run big, and he's fashioning people. He's like a cheat code. He's like Brandon Jacobs was early in his career, but with more speed.
Did he have another buck 50 yesterday, thereabouts?
149.
He's what we thought Leonard Fournette was going to be, right? Like the big, powerful, and speed back. He's outstanding.
Yeah, for me, I was going to go with Devontae Parker because I thought his performance was incredible yesterday. But I went with Raheem Mostert. Most carries he's had all season long. Seven, almost 8 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Keeps the 49ers in the game. He's able to keep the Ravens off the sideline or on the sidelines and do some things that I didn't think he could do. And I didn't think San Francisco could do in the running game.
I'm going with Deshaun Watson, not only because he caught the touchdown pass in addition to throwing for 3 of them, one of the biggest wins in the young history of the Houston Texans franchise, or I guess near 20-year history, but because of who he was up against. Much like Mostert was so impressive because you're up against the Ravens, even though they ended up losing that game. What he was able to do against that Patriots secondary throughout that football game, and the one bugaboo for Deshaun has been, as brilliant as he is, turns the ball over a little too much. That's what you can't do against New England. He played a clean game. He was exceptional. And his post-game comment of, I wanted to beat Brady once before he hung it up. I like that as well. So I go with Deshaun Watson.
Is that obituary talk?
I don't know.
Yesterday, Lamar Jackson was breaking ankles en route to another 100-yard rushing day and an impressive win over the 49ers. But, Bart, the best team win yesterday, team win now, was blank.
Best team win? I have to say the Texans. I mean, because they exercise a lot of demons, right? They have never been able to come up and beat this team. This team has always had their number, no matter J.J. Watt, no J.J. Watt, number one defense, better record. And they finally figured out that, hey, we can beat this team, but we have to be consistent throughout the game. They made winning plays. I mean, really, beating the cover zero blitz, having a plan, whatever the Patriots came up with, they had an answer to. And you have to put it on Bill O'Brien, his coaching staff, for having his team coached up and being able to play a complete game, even though they almost gave it away at the end, Coach.
To me, it's the Steelers. And when you go from big men, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, to Hodges, Benny Snell Jr., and Washington, and then figure out a way to win, and the coaching job that Mike Tomlin's done all season, I think, has been incredibly impressive. But yesterday, to rally the way that they did and play the way that they did and come back the way that they did, I thought was great.
Is Tomlin your coach of the year, Bart? You were saying that before the show.
He is right now. He's my head coach of the year.
He's been unbelievable. I'm going to go with the Ravens for team win because I didn't think Lamar played that brilliantly. I thought he played well, but I thought he missed some guys. Their passing game wasn't that great, but their schematic advantage by understanding the analytics behind fourth downs, and Justin Tucker is one of, as far as his ability versus the next best guy in the league at his position, it might be the biggest spread spread of any one position in the league.
In NFL history.
And for a team that plays the way the Ravens play, having a great kicker is so important to beat 10-1 San Francisco, to now be the one seed in the AFC, at least as of today, in a game where Lamar doesn't play great in those conditions. I thought the Ravens had the most impressive all-around team victory.
Franchise best 8-game win streak for the Baltimore Ravens. On the flip side,
anything Bart Scott did. Interesting.
Some heartbreaking losses.
We got eight.
That includes the Browns, who dropped to 5-7 with the loss in Pittsburgh. Bart, the most disappointing loss yesterday was blank.
To me, it's the Eagles. I mean, we thought this team had a path to catch the Dallas Cowboys, and they had an opportunity after the Cowboys lost to come back and win. And to lose, not only to lose, but to lose to the Miami Dolphins, I mean, that gives me no confidence that they can beat Washington, that all of a sudden looks like a pretty good football team. They control their old fate, but they just been a bad team all year, and finally, you know, they've run out, I believe, tricks, because they, you know, we've seen them make transactions, get better at the trade deadline. This year, no moves to be made. The salary cap is near the top.
Yep,
it's a wrap. Night night.
For me, it's the Eagles as well. When they have so much ahead of them, and Dallas gives them the opportunity that they did, and to have a 14-point lead with 4 minutes into 4 minutes into the third quarter against a team that you can say is tanking, but has pretty much traded away most of their young capital. It's incredibly disappointing, and I thought that they would be able to rally because there is some veteran leadership on that team, which you would like to think could take them home.
And because you're not supposed to have to rally if you're up 14 on Miami. Like, that is the rally, and you're supposed to just hold on. I understand entirely what you guys are saying with Philadelphia. The only reason I'm not saying them is, despite their loss yesterday, they are still alive to win their division. I'm going to go with the team that was de facto eliminated yesterday, and that's Cleveland. Cleveland also had a double-digit lead. Cleveland also had everything in front of them.
Also had the easiest schedule.
Had a super easy schedule. They could put the nail in Pittsburgh's coffin, essentially. Instead, Pittsburgh, despite all their injuries, despite all the turnover, despite the lack of talent on the offensive side, Pittsburgh's the team that would be in the playoffs out of the wild card team out of the AFC North. So I say the Browns, because they're now cooked, finished, done for the year, as much as that delights Jenna Wolf. And so the Browns had the most disappointing loss to me.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.